Hi, I'm Ella Sean, reluctant romance writer and host of Enchanted Beast Podcast. Welcome to the Enchanted Forest. I have a planner for almost every day of the week. Each one gives me a place to create my to-do list for the month, week, day, hour. I feel accomplished when I check a task off as done. But inversely, I feel like a complete waste of DNA when I can't check something off. I have to confess, but before I do, may I ask if you suck at being a human doing? Okay, we'll talk about it. Hello, my enchanted beast. How are you? All right, listen. I'm 1,000% sure I am not alone in this. What is this? This is the doing of humanity. I know I sound a whole lot of crazy right now, but hear me out. Think about your average weekday. Let's say your day begins at about 5:30 a.m. and ends at about 11:30 a.m. On average, that seems to be the average weekday for most adults in America. Now, and I'm speaking, you know, average, right? Average everybody, okay? From the time your alarm chimes on your cell at like 5:15, because you know we have to play the mind game, right? So we set the alarm to go off at 5:15 so that we can hit snooze and get that extra 15 minutes of sleep to trick our bodies into thinking that we're giving them something really, really sweet. I know, because I used to do it too. So it goes off at 5:15. You get to hit snooze and then you doze back off. And then at 5:30, your body's like, oh my God, thank you so much for that extra 15 minutes. And so you get up. Think about how many tasks you perform and how many tasks you complete before you walk out of your door to start a commute. Yes, I was giving you a moment to really think about that, right? Because the word task is very instrumental here. We perform lots and lots of tasks before we even leave our homes, right? We live in a world where completed tasks are rewarded. Think about it. From the time you enter preschool to probably the time you die, you have been programmed to be a completer, a checklist. This is what we're doing today, class. And once you've done it, you can check it off. Well, I've completed that task. And every time you complete a task, there seems to be some type of reward for having done so. So if we're being programmed to be task-oriented, completing these tasks and receiving rewards, for having done so, then it becomes normal for us to do and continue to do as much as we can so that we are able to receive as many rewards as is possible. So I was thinking about back when I was working as an educator, about all the tasks that were mandatory for me to have completed before I even got to my garage door to get into my car and drive wherever I was going. So I kind of had a mental morning to-do list. It was nothing that I write down. And I'm 1,000% sure you guys aren't writing down a mental to-do list, although some people do. But for me, it was a mental to-do list, right? So I had to get up in the morning, and I like to do a morning yoga stretching workout, and I still do that. But this was like, get it done, right? Morning workout, shower, hygiene, dress, makeup, hair and makeup, get dressed, right? Make and eat breakfast for myself so I have some time to breathe, and then make and pack lunch for myself and my kids. I also had to make breakfast for my kids. Feed the pets, let the dog out, let the dog in, take out dinner prep, load the dishwasher, start the dishwasher, wipe all the counters down, start a load of clothes, sort the children out for the morning, pack up the car, get my travel mug of tea, turn on the house alarm, shut the garage down. Every time I left the house at 7:15, this is what I did before I even backed out of my driveway. That's crazy. That's insane. I wake up at 5:30, and from 5:30 to 7:15, I've done all of that. Now, I know it sounds industrious and productive, and this is how we've been programmed to think that doing these things before we even start our day, well, that makes us productive. The early bird gets the worm, right? If you want to be successful, wake up at 5 a.m. We have been taught that the more we can get done, then the more productive we are. The more productive we are, the more successful we are. The more successful we are, the more respected we are. The more respected we are, the more people love and accept us. But that's a whole nother episode. So back to this doing reality that we find ourselves in. I realized I was really working like 4 or 5 full-time jobs because I had to-do lists for pretty much every area of my life. But I was not happy. I did a lot of things. I can't lie. I did a lot of things. I was extremely productive, but I wasn't happy. I wasn't content. There was a dis-ease in my body and my spirit, and I could not figure out what it was because I was so busy doing everything. I had no time to be anything. I'm going to say that again, not to sound like some jack-legged preacher, but I was so busy doing everything that I had no time to be anything. So, my body said, or my spiritual body said, this isn't working for me anymore, Ella, okay? I really need you to stop being a human doing so that we can be a spiritual being This is important. You're not created as a human doing. So everybody who's listened to my podcast knows that I have lupus. And everybody knows I tout it as the pivotal moment in my elevation. So after being diagnosed with lupus, which is a chronic autoimmune disease, which means there's no cure for it, and I'm always going to have it. It causes chronic inflammation, chronic pain, chronic fatigue. Ultimately, it leads to organ damage and failure. And I was diagnosed with this. And even after being diagnosed with it, even after fighting through bouts of crazy fatigue, the inability to even function or think, I continue to be a human doing. And that did not work out very well for me. Not at all. I was, you know, continuously plagued with new autoimmune diseases as I continued to do everything I'd always done. So after a while, all of these autoimmune diseases started to hold my energy captive, like the Nazi Gestapo, right? Like seriously, I wasn't able to do anything. And I learned this theory of the spoons. And this theory, I don't know, it flicked a switch in me. Like nothing else I'd ever read, nothing else I'd ever heard. The theory of spoons, and this was coined by a woman named Christine Mizarandino in her 2003 essay of the same name. So Christine has lupus, and she was trying to explain to her friend who does not have lupus what it felt like to have this disease. Now, I'll be honest with you. I stopped trying to explain to everybody what it feels like because unless you have it, there's no way to understand what lupus does to the body. So I was just like, forget it. You don't have it, but just know it sucks great big hairy donkey balls and nobody wants that. So check, it's not a good thing. But Christine came up with this theory of spoons. And I guess they were sitting in a restaurant where they had a lot of spoons lying around because she grabbed 12 spoons. This is what she relayed in her essay. She grabbed 12 spoons and she laid them out on the table between her and her friend. And she said to her friend, each of these spoons represents the amount of energy it would take to do daily activities and tasks. I have 12 spoons. You have 1,200 spoons. So let's start talking about what I do in a day. And when I list an activity, take away a spoon. So she starts listing the basic activities. Getting out of bed, that's a spoon. Going to the bathroom, that's a spoon. Washing my face, that's a spoon. So you get the gist. She showed her visually how her energy would wind down just by the time she did her morning routine. She was already exhausted for the day. Now, I understood that because I was living that. And so I borrowed sometimes this understanding of the spoons when I was trying to explain why I didn't get something done during the day. And I was still working And so I would try and explain to my classes or to my colleagues at school why I couldn't do something, why I didn't do something. And I tried to explain using the spoon theory, but even then, it was very difficult. I tried to explain to my family, to my friends, why I couldn't do something or why I didn't do something, why I wasn't able to check something off of my daily to-do list using the spoon theory. And even they had a hard time understanding. And once things got so bad that most of my to-do list kept getting moved over to the next day and over to the next week, I realized I could not continue to be a human doing because I sucked at being a human doing. So I had just about decided that I needed to do something different. I needed to be something different than what I was. Because I realized I was using energy that I didn't have at my disposal. I was using energy that didn't even belong to me. I'd borrow energy from next year to do something today because I had no energy. And I understood I have to become something different. And so it really was the theory of the spoons that finally helped me understand, helped me realize there are things about how I structure my day, how I spend my time, what I give my energy to, that has to be different than what I was used to. So for 38 years, I lived as a human doing. And I was productive as a human doing. I received rewards as a human doing. And people liked me and they respected me and I accepted me because I was a really, really, really good human doing. But when I was no longer good at being a human doing, I had to become something different. So here's where my thoughts started, okay? This is the beginning of my transformation from human doing to spiritual being having human experiences. Thought number one, just because I can check something off of my to-do list doesn't mean I've accomplished anything. And that was hard for me to wrap my mind around because, of course, like everybody, I've been conditioned to believe that if I check it off my to-do list and I've done something, and that's an accomplishment, right? But this flip in my thinking, just because I check it off of my to-do list doesn't really mean I've accomplished anything, really. Number two, there are 24 hours in a day. And I decide which hours are devoted to whatever. There are 24 hours in a day. I decide which hours I'm going to devote to whatever it is I'm going to devote it to. Not society, not everybody else's schedule. No, that's me. I have 24 hours. I get to decide how I'm going to use them. And number three, and this was really the kicker. I am not a human doing. There's no species anywhere called human doing. We are human beings. Secondary. But at this time, I was realizing I'm not a human doing. I'm a human being. And that really is the beginning of my transformation. So when I thought about my day and how it had always been structured. Now, at this time, I'm no longer working because I can't even get out of bed most days, right? So when I thought about my day and how it was structured, well, of course, it went along with traditional work schedules. 5:30 in the morning, 7:30, drop my kids off at school, 8:30, start my work day, 4 o'clock, leave my job. 4:45, I have all my children, and at 5 o'clock to 7, there's after-school activities, then I'm home, I'm cooking, I'm cleaning, I'm helping with homework, right? So my life was very structured, like everybody else's. So when I decided that, yeah, there are 24 hours in a day, who says I have to have breakfast in the morning? Right? And it's such a crazy question because we've all had breakfast for dinner. It's like a big treat. But when I thought of this question, it's 24 hours in a day. Who says I have to have breakfast in the morning? Again, I wasn't thinking about what I was doing. I was thinking about who I was being. Who was I when I had breakfast in the morning? I was being what everyone else was being. I was doing what everyone else was doing. I learned a lot about what works best for my body when I stopped forcing it to meet the socially acceptable standards of a structured day. So, I'm going to quickly tell you some things I learned. And if I didn't think they were important, I honestly wouldn't even spend the time doing it. But here's some things I learned about my body that I would never have learned had I continued doing what was expected. I don't need 3 meals a day. I don't need breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and 3 snacks in between. I also learned that breakfast really isn't the most important meal for me. After I was diagnosed with narcolepsy with cataplexy, and we got that kind of, you know, we're dealing with it, and I cleaned up my sleep hygiene, I realized my body didn't need an alarm clock to wake up. It woke up every morning at the same time. Every morning at the same time. Without an alarm clock, without fail, my body wakes up at the exact same time every morning. I also realized that my brain really isn't functional before 11 a.m. So it's kind of moot for me to start anything, honestly, before 11. So, you know, I'm only mentally productive between the hours of maybe 11 and 2:30. And after that, I'm pretty much, you know, running on steam and fumes. My physical energy is almost always absent. But if I have physical stuff that I really do need to get accomplished, if I have something that requires physical activity, it's best I get it done before 11. You know, and after about 3 p.m., I'm done physically and mentally. I'm pretty much over it. That's what I figured out about my physical body and how my days needed to be structured. And so that's what I did. I structured my day based on what feels best for my body. 5 a.m. to 11 a.m., any physical activities that needed to be done, I knew I could get that done. So if it's my morning workout or light exercise, if it's a little bit of cleaning, if it's picking up my grocery, because, you know, I go to Walmart and I order online, they bring it out. I love it. You know, taking the dog for a walk or medical appointments. I know if it's something that's going to require physical energy, then it's going to take place between 5 and 11. So my day does not necessarily have a to-do list in the hours of 5 and 11, between the hours of 5 and 11. There's just a, if it's something physical, I need to get it done between the hours of 5 and 11. And then whatever else, well, it's just not going to happen. So there's no need to feel any kind of way. So that freed me up, right? From 11 to 2:45, 3 o'clock, I'm like, okay, if it's going to require some serious mental focus, some cognitive focus, I need to get that kind of stuff done then. So if I have to analyze or, you know, evaluate, so if it's really going to take me paying attention and knowing what's going on, I need to get it done in the middle of the day, because that's when I am more cognitively focused. So that frees me up. So any of my entrepreneur stuff, blogging, social media, podcasting, networking, whatever, any of that stuff that requires me to be cognitively proficient, I know I need to get it done between the hours of 11-ish and 3-ish. There are no to-do lists. They're just, these are the activities that I can engage in during this time, because this is when my brain is going to allow me to do it. And from about 4 to 6, I am honestly resting those 2 hours. I am either in the bed, resting, not really asleep, just resting. Or I might be in the bed making love, or I might be looking at TV on the couch. But I'm literally always from the hours of 4 to 6 laying down somewhere. And if I'm engaging in coitus, right, then in those hours, you can bet your bottom dollar, it's slow and restorative coitus, because that also is restful in more ways than one. So I like to have that. From 6:30 to about 8:30, that's my creative time. And I don't know that people understand how cognitively you don't need to be analytical or constructive there, because your creative mind needs to be a little bit loopy. Almost, you know, people take drugs to enhance their creativity. I don't have to do that, because I'm already kind of spaced out by the time it's 6:30 in the afternoon, because my brain is somewhat sleep deprived by then, thanks to narcolepsy. So I'm already feeling a little bit high based on my sleep depravity. And so, yeah, I get to do a lot of creative stuff, right? So during this time, this is usually when I'm writing or painting or crocheting or, you know, designing stuff. So yeah, I my body's more creative in those couple of hours. And from 8:45 to 9:30, that's my nighttime, getting ready to go to bed stuff, right? Because by that time, my body is completely depleted. I am exhausted. And I really just want to be clean in the bed and ready for sleep. Now, I know everyone can't change the structure of their day, so to speak. But you can become better listeners to your body and figure out when's the best time for you to do whatever it is you need to do within the confines of your day until you're able to be in a place where you can restructure what you're doing. So if I were still teaching, and I'd come to this understanding that my physical stuff needs to happen in the morning, my cognitive stuff needs to happen a little bit later, and that my creative stuff happened way later, then my teaching day would probably look something like 8:30 to 11:30. That'd be maybe 2-3 classes. Those classes would be a lot more active. Those classes would be a lot more design-based, where we're physically manipulating materials in order to get a better understanding of literature, right? And then after that, it would be a lot more cerebral. Those classes would be more seminar-focused, more reading, analyzing, and taking into account the evaluative process, right? And then by the time my school day is over, I can go home and then handle that time accordingly. So there has to be a happy medium. There has to be a way in which we are able to structure our day based on our body's needs, as opposed to structuring our days based on what everybody else tells us to do. Because what we really want to be is productive. We want to be helpful. We want to be encouraging. We want to be enlightening, empowering. And if we are being those things, we have to do what is optimal for our bodies at our body's optimal time. Does that make any sense? Because it makes perfect sense to me. I didn't want to, you know, check stuff off of my to-do list because it was going to give me the satisfaction of having done something after I realized what my days were doing to me because I wasn't happy. So I decided that I needed to switch from my to-do list to actually having a to-be list. And so in the mornings, when I'm physically capable, I want to be productive. I want to be active. I want to be motivating. I want to be empowered. So how am I going to be those things? See? And then that dictates what activities I engage in, because I'm not trying to just do something to have it done. I am working towards being engaged, working towards being productive, working towards being encouraging. And so that means I'm not checking off a to-do list. I am becoming these things, right? So here's what it all looks like when I put my day into my body's perspective with the goal of being the very best Ella I can be. 5 a.m. to 11 a.m., all the physical shit. 11 to 3, all the mental cognitive shit. 4 to 6, nothing. Because we have to learn to be still. We have to be quiet. We have to be at rest. 6:30 to 8:30, all my creative shit. And 8:45 to 9:30, all my time to go to bed shit. And boom, my day is simple. It's easy because I'm not being anything that I don't want to be. I'm not doing senseless tasks so that I can say I did them, right? So structuring my day in this way, it kind of takes the pressure off checking the to-do box, right? And now I move in a very natural rhythm, as opposed to the staccato, stop and go, speed up, wait, slow down rhythm that society dictates for everyone else. And I also had to consider how I was spending my time. Most people value monetary stuff, material stuff, right? But please listen to me when I tell you it is not the most valuable asset you have, money and wealth and material goods. No, that is not your most valuable asset. The most valuable asset any of us has is time. I know you hate the dramatic pause, but I really want you to think about that. The most valuable asset any of us has is time. Think about time the same way you think about money. I had to start doing that because I needed to shift my thinking. People don't value time as much as they value their money. But human beings, we value our time over everything else. Why? Okay, pay attention. Let's say you work 40 hours a week and you earn $35 an hour, which means you earn $1,400 a week, right? Let's consider how you spent those 40 hours as a human doing. More than likely, you spent those 40 hours at work, rushing in and out of a building, going to and from the break room, getting coffee or snacks, a considerable amount of time with the headset on, talking to a lot of different people over the phone. You spent crazy amount of hours reading and responding to and deleting emails. You probably spent a lot of time in meetings, not paying attention because you were on Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat. You spent time talking with your coworkers and work friends in their offices, cubicles, or rooms, right? You filed papers, you went to lunches, or you had lunch brought in, you went to an office birthday party for lunch. So you spent that 40 hours doing most of what? What were you doing for 40 hours? When I thought about my life as a teacher, I realized, you know, I was making like $297 a day, almost $300 a day for 8 hours of work. Now, that does not include all the hours put in before and after school or the grading of papers or creating of projects that I did at home. No, they pay you $300 a day for 8 hours work when you normally put in about 12 hours a day on average. So we can say that I was making maybe $24.75 an hour. And I was not being anything I wanted to be. By the time I left the classroom, I hated it. I hated teaching. I hated going to work. I hated everything about it. Even before I got sick with lupus, I was hating it. Lupus freed me, of course, to leave the classroom. So I went from spending my time doing tasks, checking off task lists, and being miserable, to spending my time being helpful and encouraging to people who wanted to write. And guess what? I valued my time more. I spent my time doing, or a correction, I spent my time being exactly what I wanted to be. Helpful, encouraging, insightful, creative, innovative, aware, pleasant, right? And so I valued my time because I was being what I wanted to be. I was becoming what I wanted to become. And so because I began to value my time, those people I was helping, I was encouraging, right? They valued my time. And they never once balked when I said, yeah, I'll be more than happy to line edit your manuscript. And it equates to roughly, you know, between $75 and $150 an hour. No one batted an eyelash. I went from making $300 a day, $24 an hour, to $150 an hour. And I was enjoying myself. I wasn't doing anything, really. But I was being helpful. I was being encouraging. I was being insightful. I was being present. I was being empowering. Right? I flipped how I thought about spending my time. I spent my time becoming something altogether different than what I was when I spent my time doing everything on a to-do list. Is this making sense? Is it settling in? I sucked at being a human doing. The last thing that I needed to revamp was who and what I gave my energy to. Energy. It's a wonderfully deceptive word. Because we use it so much, right? We use it. We all, oh, I'm sending positive energy your way. Girl, your energy is toxic. And we use it all the time. We use the word energy the same way we use words like love, trust, honest, yes, right? We commonly throw it out there without any thought to what we're really saying. You know what time it is, right? Yes, word nerd girl is back because this word, well, it deserves a little word nerd girl time. So I'm on energy. How am I giving my energy? What am I giving my energy to? Energy. It's strength and vitality required for sustained physical and mental activity. It is also defined as power derived from the utilization of physical or chemical resources, especially to provide light and heat or to work machines. May exist in both potential and kinetic forms. Yes. Potential meaning positive, or excuse me, possible, and kinetic being active. So I looked at this and I thought, oh, that's nice. So energy is Yeah, whatever we have that allows us to do physical or mental activity. It's also any power that comes from physical or chemical resources. So if I push a bike up the hill, I'm using energy. My energy is pushing that bike up the hill. And so it's especially, this word energy is especially used to provide light and heat or to work a machine. So I said, cool. But then I wonder, because by this point, I have transitioned from being a human being. Well, I've transitioned from being a human doing to a human being. And now I am transitioning into a spiritual being, having human experiences. So I'm no longer a human doing, thank gosh, because, oh man, that was horrible. I sucked at it, right? I sucked at being a human doing. And so when I came to this kind of space where I needed to quantify how I was using my energy, I was in the midst and am in that midst of transitioning from human being to spiritual being, having human experiences, right? So when I think about energy from a spiritual perspective, so I'm looking up stuff, and it pretty much says everything ubiquitously on all the pages. So it is the manifestation of divine pure love, the life force that binds the soul to the physical body. Bard Nerd Girl says, let's break this down. Because all of that is saying the same thing. Science says that energy is power, either potential or kinetic, necessary to act, think, and produce light and heat and work machines. Power machines. Spiritualists say that energy is the manifestation of the divine within all things, the essence binding our souls or spiritual selves to our physical selves. Wow. Once again, science and spiritualism keep dancing to the same freaking music. They're becoming pretty good dance partners. For those of us who are paying attention, science understands that energy is what the physical body uses to think and act and create light and heat in the physical world. Science understands that energy is what the physical body acts through, thinks through, and creates light and heat in the physical world. We understand scientifically that energy powers the machine. What is the machine, Ella? Well, the spiritualists know that the energy source is simply the manifestation of our divine natures. I'm going to say that again. Spiritualists know that the energy source is really our beast, our divine natures, our enchanted natures, our divine enchanted beast that has been bound to the physical nature. So I'll ask you, what are you giving your energy to? And is it furthering this binding of spiritual and physical self? Or is it releasing you from the limitations of the physical and allowing you to spiritually transcend. Yes, that was yet another dramatic pause. Energy. That is what moves the machine. What is the machine, Ella? The human physical body, the human being. That's the machine. And energy is what moves the machine. Energy is how the machine can physically act. It's how the machine can think. It's how the machine can create. It is how the machine can produce light to illuminate. Your human body is the machine. Your enchanted beast is your spiritual self, providing energy to the machine to move about in this physical space. So, what are you giving your energy to? Because if you're giving your energy to those things that further bind your beast to your physical machine, which is extremely limited, then you are going against the will of your beast. But if you're giving your energy to those things which release your beast, release your divine nature, release your spiritual self from the limitations of the physical body, then you are in line with what your beast wants to have happen. Think about that. Our beast, our spiritual selves, are not designed to stay physically bound and caged in the limitations of dirt and dust. That is not why they chose to take on this human form. For those of you who don't know, I call my enchanted beast, whom I see as a beautiful black wolf, I call her Lilith. She needed a vehicle to maneuver in this physical space. But she was not ever intending for my physical to be in control. And when it looked like my physical would not relinquish control, my physical began to break down. When it looked like I was not going to stop doing what I had been doing all my life and surrender to her so that I could become what it is I was meant to become, then my physical body started to break down. Because Lilith isn't limited. She would not be limited by this machine made of dirt and dust. So fine, human doing, Ella. You don't want to do what I need you to do. You don't want to be what I need you to be. That's forget doing. You don't want to be what I need you to be. Then I will release myself from you and find a machine that will. And I know people are going to say, that's crazy. That doesn't make sense. But here's the truth. And if you stop and think about it, it makes perfect sense. I am housing a God. We all are. We are housing divine energy in dirt and dust. Do we really think we have enough say to bind that energy to dirt and dust? No. Of course we don't. And you would be boo-boo the fool to think you did. So, yeah. What are you giving your energy to? So, I was very fortunate when lupus and narcolepsy with cataplexy and fibromyalgia and Sjogren's and all of the other craziness that has happened to this physical body happened because it forced me to consider what I was giving my energy to, who I was giving my energy to, why I was giving my energy to. Learning this theory of the spoons, I was looking at my physical energy. How am I utilizing my physical energy? How am I spending my physical time? But all the while, Lilith was teaching me how to give my energy to those that would release her and allow her to transcend any physical and use this machine in the way it is designed to be used. Right? Energy is the essence of our divine selves, used to bind us to the physical body. It's also the essence of our divine selves that is used to free us from the limitations of our physical bodies. So while keeping us firmly rooted in this physical plane, we are able to do the work we planned out with the universe. Shut up. Oh my God. If you listened to last week's podcast, then you'll know why I'm sitting here with my mouth agape. We have to be rooted in the physical so that we're able to carry out the plan that we didn't even know we made. And we can't carry out that plan unless our beast, our divine selves, our enchanted beast is able to transcend the limitations of our physical bodies. And in order for that to happen, we have to give our energy to people and activities that will release our beast and allow her to transcend. Good grief. I'm telling you, sometimes when I'm like jotting down stuff and thinking about this, something I can't even believe that it comes to me and that I am a vessel for this knowledge and this information. But I'm so thankful for it. I am thankful and grateful and humbled for the honesty that I am allowed to share. Really. I'm going to leave you guys with this. Okay? Stop doing everything humanly possible and expecting to be your most enchanting self and live your most enchanting life. That's not how it is. That's not how it's designed to be. Be humble. Be grateful. Be present. Be ordered. Be accessible. Be aware. Be divine. Then you'll be enchanting. After all, you, me, all of us, we are spiritual beings having human experiences. We're here to be light and heat. We're not here to do anything, really. That's it. I'm done. I am done. Until next week, I look forward to hearing from you. Please call into the show using the Anchor FM mobile app with any comments you may have. I'll leave a couple of links in the description to my blog, because you probably want to go ahead and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get a lot of good information, freebies. You'll also get privileges to free mini week or mini 4-day courses. So join me, dig further into the Enchanted Forest. We're having a good time here. Be brave, be beautiful, be enchanting. Bye. This has been Ella Shawn with Enchanted Beast Podcast. Thank you for joining, and remember to stay enchanted.